Hello and welcome to this week's Wolves Fancast. Richard Hobbs here. After Wolves have victoriously qualified for a fifth round of the FA Cup. Joining me today, we've got Stu.
You're going to be up for the cup, are you? Fifth round, it's brilliant.
Exactly, no dramas here. And we've got Kim as well.
Hello there.
Hello. So, Wolves, I'm going to try and be really positive on today's show, guys, because let's be honest, the 90-minute performance against Chorley was anything but. We have managed to get through to the fifth round of the FA Cup, thanks to a wonder strike from Vitinha. We'll be going through the game itself, breaking down some of the, I guess, more positive moments and hopefully providing a little bit of construction to the less great ones. And we'll also go through some of the news at the moment, because Wolves are potentially about to make a signing, and we've also will be previewing the Chelsea game happening next week as well. So I guess first and foremost, bring your minds back to 6:45 this evening, when everything was a little bit, you know, brighter and rosier in the world. When the starting lineout came up, what were your initial thoughts, Stu? Were you happy?
I'll put 3-0. I'll put a fiver on 3-0 straight away. I thought, well, this is just going to be routine. It'll be boring, but it'll be a comfortable professional job. And I'd even however shit we've been, I had no reason to doubt that, especially with the lineup. You think, well, okay, we've gone two up top against, yeah, we've gone back to our normal back three, which we've been calling it for weeks for. Make ourselves a bit solid, even if it is against part timers. Thankfully, he was. But I just thought it'd be a routine 2-3-0 win. So I thought 5-3-0, 16-1, gate done.
Yeah, Kim, I was similar. I think I didn't end up putting in the chat and feeling, you know, a bit annoyed by it. But that was basically the team I predicted, bar maybe I think Matinho for Neves and Gibbs White, who come down with a strong case of COVID after a liking lots of tweets. How do you feel about the team?
I mean, you could say I wasn't as optimistic as Stu. I mean, I was happy that we'd started with five at the back, albeit against Chorley, I know, but I still think, you know, if we keep that five at the back for every game, we'll at least get some kind of consistency sort of moving forward. But then from there, you know, well, we'll go on to that in a bit, I guess. But you couldn't see there was any way that we couldn't lose the game. But in the end, we could have. You know, two up top, we had to do it. You know, there was no way we couldn't go two up top against Chorley. But equally, you thought wing backs are going to get forward. You know, we've got three in central midfield, so at least Vitinha should at least be breaking into the box. But I guess overall the lineup, though, you could say
you were content with. Yeah,
but then as soon as the first few minutes started, you just thought, oh God.
Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, as you said, we'll try and not necessarily keep it positive for the sake of positive, because, you know, that's not what we're about here. You know, we want to give our actual, you know, opinions. But it seemed a struggle sort of from the off, and that was sort of to be expected. And I think I went into it with the idea that, you know what, it's going to take us a bit of a while to break these down. Almost, you know, the goal would come in the second half, that we'd tie them out. And it didn't really ever seem to have that flow to the game, that Wolves were going to dominate it. We had a lot of possession, but it didn't really seem to get us anywhere. And I guess sort of the first instant really was we had for John Ruddy save very early on. And to be honest, he was probably our man of the match. considering some of his... Yeah, I can see you laughing, Stu, because considering some of his performances in the Cup the last couple of years, he either seems to have a fantastic Cup game or, you know, a bit of a stinker. And today he managed to sort of pull it out of the bag.
I thought that shot after like 40 seconds was going to go straight through him. As soon as he was on the ball, I thought, oh, no, not yet. Please, not yet. But Yeah, I mean, I've been as critical as Ruddy as anyone else, probably more so. But you are right. He pulled off the one that he tipped over the bar was in a superb save, and he didn't fuck up anything. He was comfortable, and that's all you really needed as a keeper in this kind of situation. But like you said about starting out the blocks and keeping it tight, I thought it was going to be similar to the Marine against Spurs game where it took him about 25 minutes or something to get the first goal, and then it just collapsed, and then it was a formality from then on. So when Vitinha hit his wonder strike from nowhere, I thought, okay, there we are. Floodgates will open.
And they somewhat didn't. Is that what we're saying? I mean, let's talk about the goal itself. I mean, do you think it was one of them where, I'm not going to say it was unstoppable, because I don't think any goal is truly unstoppable, but the midfield and defence have done all that's asked of them to, you know, restrict him having a shot from, what was it, about 32, 35 yards out in the end? And the dip on that ball, I mean, he strikes me as a really interesting player, Vitinha, because he's come on loan with a big option to buy. I think it's about 20 million.
18,
sorry. And that seems a lot for somebody who, you know, his first couple of games were like in the development team. He wasn't someone who kind of been drafted in to start straight away. But for me, he seems to have these little glimpses of quality. And I think the goal very much showed another string to his bow.
I think it's fair to say, though, that that goal would not have been scored in the Premier League Championship.
No.
I just think it's a good strike, but one, you wouldn't have that much time on the ball. And two, you know, the goalie, come on. It's a good strike, but I just think, for me, I think, you know, yeah, even Championship, I think the goalie would have saved.
I was going to say, Stu, as our resident goalkeeping union representative, what are your thoughts? Because it had dip, but he did get fingers to it.
Yeah, he got fingers to it, and he should have got a bit of contact with it. But I think it goes back to the thing that Neves said, remember, a couple of years ago about the mitre balls, how he loves playing with a mitre ball because you hit it and it flies everywhere. And that's probably got something to do with it as well, because that wouldn't happen with a Premier League ball. There is something about that. It should just have mitre ultimax and have the little arrows pointing in the middle like the old days and just keep it special. But there's something about that ball in the FA Cup where you see more goals like that go in than you do anywhere else for some reason. And maybe that's something to it, but he should have got a firmer hand to it. But at the same time, it was a great strike. And who else in that team would have thought of that?
Yeah, I think for me, it was not quite the reason he was brought into play. Because I don't think any player is necessarily brought in to just sort of bang one in from 30 yards. But we've been crying out from that midfield three to have someone who's just a bit more creative and willing to do something. And, you know, yeah, he had a lot of time to sort of pick the ball up 40 yards out, turn. And, you know, but they almost probably weren't expecting him to have a go. But, you know, there was a level of inviting him on. And, I mean, all things considered, the genuine lack of chances we created, not even shots on target. You know,
just shots?
Yeah, it was shots in general. The fact that he was, admittedly, it was 12 minutes in, and it's quite easy to say in hindsight, but it's almost worrying to say in hindsight that if he hadn't have just tried his luck with it, where would have the next chance come from? Because apart from that, we didn't really seem to create all too much.
Well, this podcast wouldn't be happening now. It'd be happening in like 20 minutes time because it'd be extra time. Because we were fucking awful again. let's switch tack now. Let's get into it. Because it was wank again. And nothing. You look at it. We're playing Chorley. And yet
9 minutes 40 into a recording. That's how far we made it before it's all started to go south, I think, guys.
And there's, okay, it's all fine and dandy. Yeah, we got through. Okay, fine. That's the main objective. But at the same time, we've been saved by, and he's not even a child. I just looked, he's 20 years old, which is considering he's hardly played football in his life, really, professionally, he's a bit worrying. But what I've been saying on here for months now, and me and Jordan got a lot of shit for the Sheffield United reaction last season, and maybe so, but ever since then, and I said last week and 2 weeks ago against Everton, there's no creativity in midfield whatsoever. And unless you're getting you're relying on individual brilliance and something from the wings, nothing happens. And we had wing-backs playing against Chorley. One of them costing $9 million, one potentially costing $18 million as well, in Aynori, if we won the signing 22 or whatever it is. And they didn't do anything. And you got Cotrone, who's... We'll come on to Cotrone later, but again... They were moving, not very well, but they were moving. And they said in commentary that Ian Wright said last week about Fabio Silva's movement was better against Albion. But there's only so much you can run around before the ball just turns around and goes backwards again, or sideways and then backwards, and then you start again. And it's just Groundhog Day of awfulness at the minute.
I think I agree. I mean, the biggest thing is the creativity. Now, I got pelters on Twitter last week for saying that Dendonka shouldn't have started against Albion. Now, for me, he's just not that player. We're trying to look for him to get in the box and sort of wonderfully get all these goals, but he's not that kind of player. Like, I just can't see where the creativity and the goals are coming from. And I don't blame Silva and Cotrone. And whilst they weren't great, I get it. At the end of the day, they're not even being given any chances. And the same with Raul, to be fair, a few months ago. Like, he had to create his own chances. So for me, yes, it's great that we're getting a striker in, but we still need to address the fact that, you know, apart from Neves, Moutinho and Dendonka have just been, for me, not anywhere near up to the levels that they should be.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We both got stick when you said about Dendonka's new contract on Twitter as well, when I agreed with you on it, because he's playing like you said, he's playing a role that he shouldn't be playing in. No, I think I thought he was really good today as well, all things considered, playing his actual role as a kind of box-to-box midfielder. But he's not Dave Edwards. He can't do everything. So,
no, I was going to say, I'm a big fan of Dendonka, but it's sort of like, you know, if he's the answer, what's the question a lot of the time with him? and he has clearly got a lot of qualities as a footballer, but he's not a quick passer for ball, which is what you needed today. As you saw when Neves came on, and immediately he dictated the pace whenever he got the ball. And it was, you know, even if it was to go out wide, there was zip on that ball. It is not something that Dendonka's really got in his locker. He's got a good engine on it. He can get up and down. But there are points where he was playing on the right wing.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. And he can't cross.
It's jarring to look at. It's like... trying to think of the best way I can describe this, because it's slightly niche. Do you remember England played a warm-up World Cup friendly match against Jamaica and Peter Crouch scored a hat-trick?
Yeah.
Do you remember him missing a penalty?
Yeah, yeah.
It was so awkward to watch someone who was 6'7" take a penalty. And that's what it reminds me of when Dendonka just seemingly... It wasn't even that like he was on the right-hand side, but he sometimes linked up with Doherty and Traore, and he's just almost that third man just to play it off with. He was actively having to be in a position where he had to take on a fullback and knock in a pass. There is no way the system should be designed to have Dendonka in that position. And again, as I say, I think he's got lots of qualities, but he is very much a central player.
Yeah, we've said all season long, anyway, about it's Dendonka plus one is the formula, because if he's running around doing the work, the heavy work for everyone else, leave Neves or Moutinho, which... I mean, we'll come on to him in a minute, but it's sad to see, really. But it's Dendonka plus one, because Dendonka does the hard work. You can't have him doing everything. He can't be relied upon to score, because he can't head and he can't shoot in an attacking situation. So just leave him be. Just if he wants to cause chaos and be a nuisance, then fine. But everything seems to be targeting towards him in the box. It's just madness. It doesn't change. It doesn't disappoint.
It's almost like we're hoping that he's going to be our sort of creative Madison Grealish player when he's clearly not. And that's not to criticise him. He's got his own strengths and that kind of thing. But I think to sort of, I feel a bit sorry for him actually. I mean, I suppose Vitinha has got the attributes to hopefully be able to play that sort of role. But again, I didn't see that personally. I didn't see him busting a gut to, link the play and get in the box. I just felt he was, apart from the goal, he was tidy, decent passing. But he didn't really impose himself on the game enough for me.
But I don't think that's his fault. I think it showed more than ever that they are so strangled by Nuno and his wank fest of just staying in situation. Put the number down. They're so strangled by his determination to stick in the lines and stay in your spot. It's just ridiculous now. I mean, it doesn't make any sense because you could see at times where he was looking up and you could see he wanted to try and push on, but then he'd turn around and pass it backwards. It was almost like, oh no, I've gone too far now. I'm going to get a slap.
Yeah, he was in centre midfield. He wasn't playing as that centre attacking midfielder for me.
I think I was going to say for me that arguably said more about Matinho's performance than Vitinha's because I was always sort of told good players always want the ball, and any good midfielder will always be within sort of 10 yards of the ball, no matter where it is. And there were points where Vitinha was stopping really deep just because he needed the ball to turn on it. And it got me thinking at a certain point in the half where I was like, well, if he's doing that, who's 15 yards further from the pitch? Because we're missing that. And, he seemed to, Vitinha missed almost the two people who should be always either side of him. I think that's sort of down to the wing backs. A lot of Stu mentioned that he was almost having to get the ball, and it was like, well, where do I go? Do I pass to two strikers who are basically just marked up against two big centre halves, or do I turn back and have, Matinho? And as I said, I think he showed glimpses. I don't think it was a great performance by anyone, it is still a big question mark for me, that midfield, because again, similar with Dendonka, we all sort of say a lot of things about him. I don't think any of them are wrong, but no one really knows what sort of player he actually is.
That's because he's asked to do. He's been asked to do so many different roles in different games that everyone's kind of confused. When that's never a good thing, is it really? I mean, we know Neves' strengths, weaknesses. Clearly, he can pass, he can control the tempo of the game. He hasn't got that pace, but we know what his strengths and weaknesses are, and we know what kind of role he plays in the team. Whereas I don't think Dendonka, he's not great at one particular thing, but he's not awful at anything. But then that's kind of a weakness, I think.
Yeah, he doesn't. I mean, I'd be interested to sort of see him have we said it's Dendonka plus one in that midfield because he gives you that physicality and he's a decent midfielder. But I still think his future's in a back three, personally. I think that sort of suits him a bit better on the right side of it. But I know, I think it's going to be an interesting one, chiefly because that midfield, it's a problem that has not really been solved, if we're going to be on it, 2.5 seasons in the Premier League. So I think it's, and by the looks of, I guess, the transfer window coming to a close in the next week or so, it doesn't seem like it will be necessarily shifting until the summer now. But I was going to say, before we sort of round up the first half of the game, Stu, you mentioned about Matinho again, who...
He's gone from. I mean, when they showed the highlights before the game of the cup semi final and all the bad memories came flooding back. But when you think back to that season, and he won player of the season that year, and he was the best player I've ever seen in a Wolves shirt. And still, to this day, that's not going to change because he was absolutely immense that first season for us. But it's almost like now, It's almost like a tribute act, eh? But like a shit one, like at the Red Lion on a Thursday, not even a Friday. It's got to the stage now where he was pretty. He couldn't even chest the ball down. He was passing out for throw-ins. It just looks like a sad end to someone who's been incredible. But at the same time, when he's played for Portugal, not too long ago, he was superb. So where's the problem? I wonder.
Is that his confidence, or has his legs just completely gone now?
Well, that's
a bit of both.
Well, that's what if I hadn't watched him playing for Portugal, I would have said his time's come. But he was superb, and he was playing almost like a number 10 at times. That's the last couple of games I saw him in a claret shirt. So is he being throttled as well? And is he being tried? Because going back 2 years when Neves and Moutinho were together and they were great, then you move on to last season where, yeah, it was a slog. And then you go on to this season and it's just a complete catastrophe. So if nothing's changed and you're relying on something that didn't work last year, then how is it going to get better? And you're just dragging everyone down to the same level. And you've got Martin, he's completely out of... I mean, he doesn't look sure of confidence because he's still wanting the ball and he's still trying things, but it's just not coming off. And you're thinking, well, why is it not coming off? Is there something there mentally? Is he not in the right position? Which, to me, he doesn't look like he's in the right position. And him and Neves seem to not be able to play together anymore for whatever reason. But playing Neves and Moutinho together now is just you just wouldn't do it, would you? And now it's got to the stage where he's had probably the worst game of his entire career against part-timers managed by a school teacher.
But then you could say that about a lot of players, couldn't you? Like in our team at the moment, you know.
Yeah, you could.
Just because Martinho's of that age, the obvious thing to be would say would be like, yeah, his legs have gone. But, you know, you can't say that for a lot of our players, and they've just looked just as bad, a lot of them. So,
yeah, I personally don't think his legs have gone. I think there's something fundamentally wrong with a lot of, it's not even just one person, is it, anymore? It's like the whole team. It's spreading. Yeah. It's almost like it's spreading like a global disease through the first team squad, where it's not just one. If it was one player playing shit, then you could tackle that, fine. But it's not just one. I mean, Cody, when he got booked, and he just looked pissed off. It's like, oh, well, I've had enough. You think, well, that's your captain behaving like that. It's like the last days of Mick McCarthy when Carl Henry was doing ridiculous things, and it just looks like the temple's crumbling a bit to me now.
Yeah, I think I guess that sort of nicely moves on to the second half of the game and that Cody booking, because that's almost that was the second note I made after the second half, was that A, how poor we were coming out into the second half. That first 5-10 minutes was one of the worst periods of football I've seen Wolves play in a while for me. And it chiefly that is relative to the opposition. But the inability to keep that ball was shocking, and to give them the opportunity to do it. Whereas, you know, we've all watched enough football under Nuno, and usually when we come out after a second half, the game plan is usually we strike them fast, especially when you've not done well in periods of the first half, which does show something to me that it's not quite right there in terms of motivating these players in the same way.
But you say usually. When was the last time that actually happened, though?
Yeah.
Because you got Brighton, second half, shambles, Everton, Albion.
Yeah,
it's just every week, it's just wank all the time. And it's gone from our Wolves to play well in the second half. But we haven't done it all season long. It's not even a one-off anymore. It's a thing where it's getting worse and worse.
Yeah, and it didn't really get a lot better for me. And I think the Cody booking was silly. I know there was something about his reaction to it was just a little bit, I wouldn't say odd, but it didn't sit quite right, did it? But you know, I'm not necessarily saying he needs to be dropped or anything like that, but I thought that when he was in a back four, that he can play in a back four. Can he do it to a high enough standard? Jory, I think he's still technically out on that one. But he seems to have lost that aura about him at the moment, and that sort of genuine, assertive, outward-going leadership style. And, you know, you can see that because of how unorganised Wolves look for a lot of the time. And that stems through those players for me. And he is the one who I think gives a lot of those around him that level of confidence. And if he's not on form, if he's not banging the drum, I think a lot of those other players maybe feel it as well. So if he's, you know, if his passing game's off, his leadership's off, and if a formation doesn't fit him, where's his future in this team?
I think that's a bit unfair to say that, you know, you haven't said that, but to say that he's lacking the passion or the leadership, I don't think that's fair. But I just think throughout the team, I feel like there's a lack of belief in what we're trying to do. Like, you never felt that we thought, like, can we just go at Chorley today, put the game to bed and just move on? It was always going to be cagey. And whilst I agree in terms of Cody himself, he hasn't looked himself, but that's not just today.
No, I think this has been from the past few games, I think.
And whether that's because we keep chopping and changing from back four to back five with different personnel, it's throughout the team, and obviously that kind of starts with him. I don't think we're progressing as a team because of chopping, changing, formations, different personnel. Like, that can't help players.
No.
To, you know, it can't help them. But then equally, to counteract that, I suppose you could say that Nuno is trying to find, without trying to be too obvious, solutions because we're not winning games. So, you know.
It is really difficult. And I mean, I'm trying not to have sort of a huge pop at him, but I don't know. I think it's interesting that, I can't remember if I said this after a West Brom game, that, you know, he is supposed to be Nuno on the pitch. And you could argue neither of them are particularly in form at the moment. And it's almost maybe a bit, you know, chicken and the egg in terms of, well, it is one not quite right because the other's not quite right. And it seems to almost be bouncing off them in terms of, I guess, a leadership point of view, and not enough players around them for me are stepping up as well. It's not, as Stu said, it's not a singular issue. This isn't, oh, Cody's not in great form, or, oh, Nuno's not picking the right team. You know, we could probably sort of have a relatively in-depth analysis of, you know, eight of that starting 11 quite easily and say something not, you know, relatively similar in terms of sort of picking them apart. And it's not necessarily sort of super constructive to do so. But I think with Cody, there seems to have, let's say, just doesn't seem to have the same presence about him at the moment for me. But the game sort of did slightly change for me at about the 72nd minute when the subs came on, 68th minute, sorry, when Neto, Neves and Traore came on to hopefully wrestle back a level of control. So, you know, that 15 minutes after the first half. And we did look better, which is sort of not surprising when you're bringing on two very good wingers and a very accomplished centre midfielder against a team five divisions below you. do you know what I mean? Like, it's,
but that's what it came to. That's what it came to. That we had to bring on probably the best, the player of the season in Neto, and Traore is probably our most unpredictable and dangerous winger, and Neves, because the whole midfield had done fuck all against Chorley. It's humiliating again, and it's just, I mean, when I did momentarily forget that you could make five subs, so I thought, oh, he's completely lost his mind here. But fair play, he did the right thing at the right time there, because we would have conceded sooner rather than later at that point.
No, it showed it was needed. And I thought, I don't think Troy did a huge amount when he came on, but I thought Neto and Neves just they provided a level of quality that that game was unbefitting of for Wolves, in my opinion.
It was almost just the control without doing anything spectacular, wasn't it? With those two, I think.
Yeah.
Just to almost, like, you know, Neves just hold the ball, pass it simple in his terms, that Moutinho and Dendonka just, and Vitinha, they just weren't doing fast enough. And Neves just made it look easy, you know. And Traore obviously didn't do a lot, but at least, you know, he was running with the ball. You know, he had that bit of controversy when he left his foot in.
That could have been tasty. That, honestly, that kept me going for a good portion of that game second half, where I was like, there's genuinely a point where I was like, do I just start reading my book, or, you know, actually sort of grin and bear watching this football? And after seeing that, I thought something tasty could happen here. I mean, did any...
It's just the way they laughed.
Yeah. it was an odd reaction. I'd have been fascinated to have seen Traore's face if there was a camera from the opposite direction, because I feel like if Traore stared me down after I confronted him, I would pretty much crumble. Like, mentally, physically, emotionally.
Yeah, they showed me, like, literally just after, though, and he was like, I thought he might be laughing, but no, he was absolutely stone-faced, like, fume.
I don't even know where to sort of go from there. I was going to say, who would win in a fight out of Adama and the entire backroom staff of Chorley, but... I guess sort of the last sort of note I made in terms of the game, and again, hopefully ending on a slightly positive note, was Willy Bolly having a decent performance?
Yeah,
I mean,
needed.
I think it was needed with the West Brom game, that he didn't really, not really shone particularly well, and he seemed to sort of suffer after being out for a few weeks, but. It would almost be been better if he didn't play against West Brom and this was his comeback game, because it was almost suited for him in terms of how they're sort of sticking up high balls, because he is our most dominant aerial threat defensively. And he was just soaking it up for large portions of the game, particularly second half.
If he hadn't been there, we would have lost that game. Again, nothing against Sace, but if Sace had been in there, and, well, it's just the lack of Willy Bolly. If that had been a thing, we would have lost that game.
Yeah.
100%, because he was immense. And I think that says everything we need to say about the game, really, that a central defender and keeper were probably man of the match against Chorley.
I completely agree. I was going to say, should we do a sort of quick man of the match? But I think we almost feels like we've whittled it down between two, or maybe Vitinha, if you just want to give it to him for a goal. But judging by the last half now of this conversation, I don't think we probably will. So who would you give your man of the match to, Stu?
Probably Bolly. He was just immense. And he was more of an influence than anything else at the back, because it was almost like a Gandalf kind of situation. And that's what we needed tonight.
Kim, how about you?
No, I definitely agree. I think it was obvious to see that Ruddy and Bolly were probably only two decent performances. You know, in the air, Bolly was sort of back to his best. And I mean, I know it's a bit cringy almost just to say, because it was against Chorley, so you expect him to be. But yeah, I think hopefully that'll give him the confidence to sort of carry on from this now, because you could say that he hasn't been... He's been up and down, hasn't he, this season? He hasn't been, you know, his commanding self that we kind of expect from him. But yeah, I think his inclusion back into the team in a back five with Sace, Bolly, Cody, you know, that's got to be the way forward for me.
No, completely agree. And fingers crossed we do something similar against Chelsea, which we'll be chatting about after this short break. Hi, Richard here. before you go back to hearing us dissect the latest Wolves news, some really shoehorn Simpsons references, a bit of 90s film action, of course, a bit of wrestling, I just want to do a quick shout out for our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. Now, they've done a fantastic job on the Wolves Fancast website, wolvesfancast.com, please go check it out. But they're not just web designers, they're a creative agency that cover all your design needs, from websites, brochures and signage to marketing, logo design and branding. There's basically nothing they can't do marketing-wise, so make sure you check them out at pixelyetimedia.com, and I'll let you get back to enjoying the show. Welcome back. Before we talk about the Chelsea game, though, Wolves might actually be making a January signing, and it's not just for calling a player on loan. Wolves look all but set to be signing William Jose, apologies for pronunciation, from Real Sociedad. Looks like it's going to be a loan with the option to buy it around 22 million. I think they're still sort of negotiating the ins and outs of it, because at the moment it looks like it'll be no upfront fee for a loan, but you know, be lumped with a potentially higher option to buy at the end of it. For me, it very much strikes me as a classic Fosun deal in terms of getting a player on loan and then signing him for around 20 million. It's part and parcel. It's how they like to do their business model, I think. On paper, he seems to tick all the boxes in terms of him being a big physical striker who can link up the play, but also knows where the back of the net is. I will level with you, though. That is as much as I know about him, and the fact he scored a couple of goals the other night as well. So I'm not going to claim to be an expert or anything. Stu, do you fancy claiming to be an expert on him?
I watched that game, that's all I would say.
Okay, so you're more clued up in it than me.
He looked great. He looked exactly like the kind of rail replacement that you'd want, really. You only have to look at his goals, that he's got a bit of... He's got a bit of the bastard in him, which is what we've been lacking with young Fabio Silva. So he's, I mean, we said this to Gully, that it's weird that, I mean, I watch quite a lot of La Liga stuff, and I can't remember seeing a game with him playing in it. So be that what it is, but his record is superb, especially in that league. So if we're getting him for, well, nothing to start with, and pittance if it works, then so be. Bring it on.
Yeah, I mean, he's at least a qualified striker, like our current strikers are unqualified. But I mean, Fabio's basically got a provisional license, hasn't he, at the moment? Whereas big Billy Jose seems to, you know, have all the assets. Kim, are you excited about the potential signing?
I mean, you've got to be, haven't you, with current strike force not looking ideal tonight against Chorling. You know, I mean, I don't want to, you know, bash in Fabio Silva, who's 18, and Catrone, who clearly hasn't played a lot of football, but just having a little gander on YouTube at this new striker, and I know everyone looks good on YouTube, it's fine. But
that's good, because this is where I was going to say, short plug for Wolves Fancast YouTube channel.
at least he looks like, you know, he has the same sort of attributes as Raul. You know, he knows where the goal is. But and to be fair, his goal the other night looked to kind of come out of nothing. His one goal just outside the box. So, you know, he's got to kind of get used to that, hasn't he? You know, Raul almost created goals out of nothing for himself. So, you know, I can't say I'm disappointed. And the fact that it doesn't look like there's a loan fee. Did I read that term?
Yeah, it seems to sort of be at the moment that it's sort of no fee, but higher at the end if we actually do want to buy him. I find it all fascinating how they're structuring deals at the moment. Now we're in sort of a post-Brexit world and things like that. It's you know, it's the same with the Jota deal. It's going to be the new rage, isn't it, in terms of how deals are actually done and how much is sort of properly open. I mean, you both sort of touched on to Catrone sort of covering that, as you well should. The question is, I mean, he's been linked with a move yet again back to Italy, going to Parma. Now, my question is, would you keep him at the club and have him almost as a second striker in the depth chart, or even third behind Silva, or would you bin him out? Because I think, if we're going to be honest, does Nuno really want him at the club?
He was good enough last time. he ain't played for a year, and he ain't good enough now. So it's just wasting everyone's time. It's wasting his time bringing him into a country where he can't speak the language. So he's obviously going to be annoyed. And I mean, that article coming out the other day saying, "Oh, we're going to try and help him accommodate him." It's a load of bollocks. Why would you come out with something like that when he's obviously not going to be here for long? When you're signing another striker straight away, I mean, you got the only thing going for him is that he's not old enough to be Kim's son. That's it. Which, and I mean, you're talking about inexperience. At least he's played football. That's the only plus point over Fabio Silva he has. Which, other than that, there's no point in being here.
I'm absolutely speechless because I'm trying to think of that little comment.
I'm genuinely just trying to think of a link through to Kim here, which is not going to be offensive. So I will just go with Kim. What are your thoughts on keeping or hooking Cotrone?
Well, I actually feel a bit sorry for him, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of just got bought back, and he almost, from his social media posts, he seemed that he was okay to be back, and he was, you know, ready to go. But then he's had no football, so you've got to give him a little bit of time. And now he hears that, I would imagine, that another striker's coming in. Now, personally, in an ideal world, we'd keep Cotrone just for the bench as a third striker, just so we don't, in case we have any of the disasters, you never know, Silva might get injured and then, you know, the new striker doesn't work out and then it's like, where's Cotrone? So I think for me, I would just, but then I guess it's not the fact that it's Cotrone, it's just the fact that I'm getting nervous that we'll let another striker go, have two, one gets injured and then we're
back in the same position.
In the same position.
Yeah, that to be fair, that's my sort of rationale behind it, is that whether he's good enough is, I wouldn't say it's debatable, but he's not exactly lit the world on fire, but he has more experience and probably more quality at the moment than Silva if he gets a run of games in him, I think, and he's more likely to score. But I think if you put in Jose in there, he wouldn't be number one, and it really depends on what he wants to think as a footballer at the moment. You know, whether he wants to be in a settled environment or he wants to play, I guess, sort of first team football, whether Palmer can actually offer that to him. He's barely played this season. And you know, I do feel a bit sorry for him, because he has moved last season and it didn't really pan out for him. He threw his rattle out a bit and got shipped out to Florentina, and it's all become a bit messy for him, and I do feel for him a bit on a personal level, but it's kind of up to him what he wants to make of it all. You know, if he wants to knuckle down and, you know, show us what he can do and show the manager what he can do, fantastic. Whether it's at this club or another club, sort of up to him. But the last thing you ever want to see is him lose that potential, because he's obviously got some. You know, you don't play for AC Milan unless you've got a level of quality about you. And we'll see, I guess. But with what? Is it a week or so left of the window as of time of recording it? I think it's at the... Stu, you're a fount of knowledge on these sorts of things. Is it the start of February closes again?
Normally is. I don't know if it's changed because of the season starting later. I ain't sure.
Yeah,
but it's normally round about that. So we've probably got about a week, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, can you see Wolves signing anyone else? If we're being realistic, we've all talked about the lack of cohesion, economy in that midfield, and probably being a number short in a maybe on a out wide as well. Do we really see sort of any more players coming in?
I mean, I need to see this one. Well, it's still not happened, but we'll act like it is. I didn't see this one coming in, really. I don't think, they'd always seen the solutions are in the squad, and, well, whatever that means. And clearly they're not, because nothing changes. And now we've gone out and found this guy from almost out of nowhere, despite his decent record. So who knows? I mean, one thing I could probably say, it wouldn't surprise me if Gibbs White's fucked off again. Just because, I mean, he's come back, he's played one game out of position. He's played half of football in kind of midfield. He'd done nothing at all. And then, you know, Vettini doing that tonight. He's going to be down the pecking order again, you'd think. So that wouldn't surprise me if he's shipped out on loan again. But you just never know, do you? I mean, the way that they just keep everything so in-house and quiet that you never know what's going to happen. So I wouldn't be surprised if nothing happens, but at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if something did.
Kim, are you optimistic about signing anyone else?
I feel like if we do, it's going to be someone for the future. I can't see it happening, but you never know. I mean, unless we ridiculously sell Traore, which again, you wouldn't rule out, would you? You know, from the players that we sold last season. I almost think you can't rule anything out. I just think a centre midfielder with a bit of creative flair is all I'd ask for. But, yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
So much. Just someone who can, you know, create lots of chances for everyone on the pitch. We don't ask for much, do we? But you're right. Well, it's what we need. It sounds so stupid when we say it, but you know, we're just crying out for, you know, someone who can play in that number 10 role, who can genuinely dictate a game for us higher up the pitch.
It's not like it's these people don't exist. I mean, Buendia at Norwich. How many times have we said this before? 15, 20 million you're getting for now. His contract's either this summer or next summer. It's up. I presume it's next summer. Just go and just spend the fucking money. It doesn't matter. It's either that or we kind of limp around doing nothing at all, kind of bothering the bottom six every so often, and then all our players leave in the summer. If that's what you want, then fine.
And the thing is, we know that Buendia looked good in a rubbish Norwich team.
Yeah, exactly. It was him and Cantwell in that team. And Cantwell scored 2 goals this season, so he ain't pushed on. But Buendia, you see him every week in the highlights on Quest. He's the one who does everything for Norwich. They just go and buy him.
I mean, something sort of strikes me as not... I was going to say, hot take. I don't think the Wolves transfer policy is quite right. Because I think it's sort of... We've got, obviously, Nuno likes to work with a small squad, so he's selective in who he wants to work with. But if you're struggling to find players to improve the team because of your belief in the size of the squad and the type of player, you really try, you know, you try to win a fight with at least one hand tied behind your back a lot of the time. And, you know, Buendia is sort of a really good example. So he's someone who did well in the Premier League last season, by all accounts, for poor Norwich team. He's shown he is not almost a one-trick pony, and he's continued to impress this season as well. His fee isn't huge. It's in that ballpark. Wolves don't like to pay more than they need to for players a lot of the time, and they like that sweet 15 to 20 million place marker. So it's, why aren't Wolves in for him? Is it, you know, he's not a Nuno player? Well, what does that sort of mean? Because we need players. We need them of quality. And we're seemingly being held back at this point by a lack of the right investment in the squad, maybe.
It's almost like, because he doesn't fit into a round hole perfectly. That's what this whole thing's been about for 3-4 years. We knew now, and it's worked up to a point. But you get to a point where you can't just play simple banks of players anymore. You have to have some kind of creativity. You can't just rely on wingers and individual brilliance all the time. And what we've said over and over again,
especially if you don't have especially if you don't have a squad who can do that in depth.
Yeah,
you know, and I think Podence coming in for Jota has worked, but he's injured half the time.
Yeah,
we had Jimenez; he's got injured. What happens then? Those were our two, you know, essentially our three main. Neto stepped up really admirably this season, but he's essentially having to do it all himself in that attack at the moment.
And he's 20 years old. He's our only hope.
And you could say as well that we're just that obsessed with the system that arguably Neves has probably got the attributes to be a creative midfielder.
Yeah.
But he's never played in that way. Like, fair enough, lately he has at least been getting in the box and scored from a goal, like a tap-in. But I just don't think he's played in the way. Like, he has got the attributes as to what we've been saying we need, that creative spark. We've got Ruben Neves in midfield and we're saying we've got no creative spark. It just seems mad to say it. But it's just the way he's been deployed at times just doesn't play to his strengths for me.
But this is going to be the problem when, assuming Jose comes in, people are automatically going to think, oh, well, that's it then. We've got a strike again. We're all sorted. And if he don't get chances, how's he going to score? It's the same problem.
Yeah. I think it goes back to what we're saying in the first half of the show. A lot of it comes down to our midfield. And that is where it's an old saying, but it's where football has won and lost. And our midfield three or five, however you want to look at it, you know, if you include your wing backs or you include the wide forwards, it doesn't click at the moment. And that's really troubling. I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting week to see how the transfers play out. But potentially, if we sign Willian before early next week, there's a chance he will be playing against Chelsea, which is the next game we've got coming up. Now, for me, Chelsea are an interesting opposition. They're playing Luton in the FA Cup this weekend. They're currently eighth in the league, and they strike me as a team with a very high ceiling but a very low basement. Of course, Wolves managed to get points off them earlier this season with a late Sace goal. How are you sort of viewing this game, I guess? Either we can remove the prism of Chorley if we want to, or, you know, it doesn't really matter because we've played, you know, pretty poor the last, 3 months. That's a bit harsh. A couple of months.
If you take Nuno's history, this would be a battle of the sack race on current form. Because both sides are absolutely shite. And they are. There's no beating around the bush about it. That we just are. We're terrible. Chelsea ain't much better. But Lampard's, I mean, we didn't turn up at Stamford Bridge last time, did we? It was a joke at the end of last season. That was shambles. But I don't know. There's something about that Chelsea side that you got Mendy in goal who looked unbeatable in the first few weeks, and now he looks like he's got an error in him. Now they've dragged him down to their level, kind of thing. So I've probably got more confidence going into that Chelsea game because of how bad they are at the minute than I had tonight. that's going to say it all, but it's not going to be a classic. That's what I'm going to say that much.
They're almost there for the taking, aren't they?
Exactly. And
you know, we've got to play five at the back again and literally just hit them on the break because they're obviously going to, you know, have a lot of the ball, which is fine. You know, we're going to contain them. Again, if we're defensively sound, which hasn't been happening lately, but if we're back to our old ways, and you've got Neto and Traore on the break, fingers crossed with the new striker, then I don't see why we couldn't almost not just pull off a draw, but pull off a win. But yeah, I think with our defence at the moment, it doesn't feel like that'll happen. But, you know, if you think about it, I think we could get a result. But
I love how negative we've been throughout probably most of the show, and then we've gone, I think we could nick something here, because I'm of the same opinion. And Wolves are to be fair, Wolves have been inconsistent, and now we've been consistently poor for a bit, and we've got to start the climb back up, and we know what we're about at the heart of this team. The philosophy, I don't think, has truly changed, and we know what we're good at. They just need to rediscover it, and maybe against Chorley actually getting a clean sheet. Okay. I'm digging here. I am really digging for something.
You stole it from my mouth. I was just going to say, putting a twist on it, having an actual clean sheet for the first time in months on end is probably, I mean, this tonight, it can't get any lower than this. And even though we've won, it can't get any lower and more humiliating than being outplayed and having less shots than Chorley away. So you think, well, okay, we've got a base to build on. There's something there. It might be tiny, but tiny things, big trees grow from small acorns. Let's just go with that. Yeah. And plus the fact that, I mean, Jose's not going to be playing in this game, is he, though? Because his registration will come through in time. That's the only problem.
Ah. Oh, that's a shame. I don't know how long it takes for these to come through now. I mean, hopefully there's a minor miracle and we end up having to do an extra bit of a segment on a podcast on a Friday night at 5 to 11. But I mean, Kim's talked about her team a bit. Stu, how do you sort of line up? I'm assuming not 4-2-3-1.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Never again, ever. It is, for as long as Nuno's here, which that's debatable how much I want that to last for. I don't want to see that formation under Nuno ever again, personally. So, yeah, just go back to what we know. Let's go back to what we know. 3-4-3. Just get it done. And if that's Fabio Silva or Cotroni up front, it doesn't really matter. I mean, just on form-wise, I mean, that miss against Albion for Cotroni, I mean, he just looks massively out of match fitness, which is obviously the case because he hasn't played football for a year. So, I mean, it's either or, it's of a bad situation, but we can't do anything other than 3-4-3 for me. Because two up front tonight didn't work. So just go back to what we actually are good at in 3-4-3.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Obviously, I'd probably bring Neto back in probably alongside.
Yeah, Duncan, Neto and Troy, right?
And, you know, Neto is obviously a starter. So it's almost, well, how do you bring out the best of Neto for me? Does he perform behind two in that attacking role? Not quite sure. With, you know, I can't see Cotroni or Silva sort of stretching the play out wide and interlinking to what we need. So it sort of does put us down to 3-4-3. Sorry. I think it's going to be an interesting game. I feel like it's going to have some either really high quality moments from either side, but it's also going to have some very poor bits on display as well.
I mean, there is one thing to point out, though. Even without Jozo coming in for that game, if we get beat comfortably by Chelsea, there is something seriously wrong at this football club because, like Kim said, they're there for the taking. And if we roll over and get spanked by them in the form that they're in, we're in the shit, good and proper, regardless of who we bring in.
Unless they suddenly regain their form and look like how they should look with the players that they have got. But at the moment, when we're losing, we're literally gifting teams goals, aren't we? I mean, it's not like, you know, we're getting outfoxed. We're literally just every goal we seem to concede is just from a set piece, just horrible defending. And until we put that right, really, we're not going anywhere, are we? So as long as we literally keep things tight, go back to the old ways of keeping it a 0-0, second half, and just grab a goal, I'd be happy with that and take it now, personally. But
yeah, I mean, if we got 0-0, I'd do this whole podcast with no top on next week. I mean, I'll be ecstatic because that's just, it's going back to classic Wolves, and it's what we actually are good at. So just do that. Just do what you're good at. It's not hard.
And when we went back to four, okay, we looked more threatening, but we didn't actually score many goals still.
No,
so it was
made no difference.
So if we went to four at the back and scored three or four goals a game and conceded five, there might be an argument because, you know, at least we could outscore teams, but we don't. We might create a few more chances, but we still didn't put the ball in the net, so it's pretty pointless, isn't it?
Yeah.
What are your I was going to say, now we've given it the big talk, what are your score predictions, guys?
0-0. happiness of 0-0.
1-1 for me.
Yeah, I'm going to err on the side of caution and go for 0-0 and just really hope that, in a way, like we just how it's 1-1, sort of the same process that, look, we just need to go back to building that foundation. And if it's from 0-0s, 1-0s or whatever, that's going to be how we kind of climb ourselves out of this, in my opinion. Let's say, before we go on to Twitter Corner, we have got an email that was sent to us early in the week from a listener over in California. Big up to all of our American listeners, because we know we've got sort of quite a few over there. But this one's from James Wilson. I assume not the same James Wilson who used to play for Man United. I'm not going to do the accent. I'm not going to do the accent, don't worry. Hey guys. I really won't. I'll be sensible. Sorry. Hey guys. It's your Californian listener here, which implies we only have one. It's a big state, so
we'll Blake's see. Here, so it doesn't count.
Yeah, so we've got more than I reckon we've got at least more than one. Anyway, sorry, James. Loved the conversation around rules of the game, around penalties, which we discussed after the West Brom one, where it was sort of very much on the line. And I wanted to add something for consideration. I posed a question. Why are fouls inside the box a penalty kick? When I saw that, I was like, hey. It seems like we just accept that fact as it's such an old rule. The penalty kick was devised as means to punish the defending team when they fouled an attacking player who was going through to score, handle the ball on the goal line. Said, did you know the first penalty awarded in the Football League was to Wolves? Which... to be honest, yeah, because we've done enough pub quizzes on where Wolves have cropped up, I think, on this one, but it's a lovely little fact. So why should any old foul in the box be a penalty? I think about it for a second. It's essentially a free goal. You're giving the team for a foul that may be nowhere near close to preventing a goal being scored. Look at the Robinson penalty. He was in the process of passing the ball outside the box when he was fouled. And there's only one other West Brom player in the box who wasn't involved in the play. If a foul was 1 yard back, it's suddenly a free kick. But since it's in the box, why should they be given a free goal? They weren't even close to scoring at that moment. I submit that a penalty kick, which gives the team an attacking advantage by giving them a free goal, should only be awarded when a foul's occurred in the box, which stops the goal-scoring opportunity. I know this might create more problems than it solves, but as now, I wonder if it helps the tiny bit where it goes to a tiny bit of contact in the box. My solution would probably take away 10-15 percent of penalties each month, but it would stop sort of silly fouls being punished. Thanks for taking time to read this. Also, it's time we really think about why we hand out free goals like it's candy. So big thanks, James, for your email on that one. It is really appreciated. And it did raise a good point, I think, for me. And we'll just really briefly, because we've kind of emotionally sort of moved on from the West Brom game to a degree. My question is sort of quickly around sort of free kicks, penalties. Do you think there's any sort of validation in his idea of, you know, if they're almost facing the opposite way, if they don't look like scoring, it happens on the corner of the box, should it still be a penalty?
I think Andy said something like this about... it was someone else in the group said it about where penalties used to actually be for actual fouls in the box and like preventing a goal scoring opportunity, which is what he's kind of said there. So, I mean, that would make actual sense. I'd be all for that. I mean, you could even have, if it was a penalty in the area, you could have the old
indirect free kick.
Oh no, the MLS penalties situation.
Oh, what, from the run-up?
Yeah, from the halfway line, you could bring that back and have it as an alternative situation. But I know what he means, and I'd be interested to see how long he's watched football for, because this kind of madness has just happened for years. It's just been magnified by VAR and zooming in on the actual lines of where penalties are given.
I mean, for me, I understand it in where he's coming from, but you know, if they're facing the opposite way, if they're going away from goal, how have they then given an opportunity to score from a far greater position from where the foul occurred in? And part of it is just, but that's the size of that's the penalty box, is what the argument comes down to. Mm. Same as the 6 yard box, like, but that's where it is. And for me, I don't think it, say, for my sort of, I guess, wacky idea, I wouldn't have a penalty box as big as it is. I don't, you know, it's half the size of a basketball court or something ridiculous, or a tennis court. It's a huge area where you think a goalie can actually handle a football, or where those meaningful opportunities have. I'd have it 12 yards. I'd have it essentially a two-thirds of the size personally, but it's also quite late at night for me to have these have these thoughts, I guess. Kim, before we briefly go on to Twitter Corner and hopefully end on a light-hearted note, any thoughts on how big or small a penalty box should be, or whether fouls should be given where, depending on where they are?
You know what, I've never actually, this is quite a good question actually, but because I've never actually considered it, but when you think about it, so many penalties that are given are where players are literally going down blind alleys, or have almost lost control of the ball and the ball's about to go out of play, and then they play for the foul, which is fair enough, but it's not like it's, you know, very rarely is it the last man, really, and they're about to literally score a goal. So obviously I need a bit of thinking through, but I don't hate the idea. And if you think about it, if you know, when you get an indirect free kick, well, when I see an indirect free kick, which doesn't happen very often, you're almost like, oh my God, is this about to go in, sort of thing. It's quite like a niche thing, isn't it? Whereas, I don't know, penalties are almost a bit like you're expecting the ball to go in, but there's so many these days that it's just like, another penalty.
I do feel that there should be more indirect free kicks given in the box. And this is again, for the suspense around it, having sort of 10 men on the line, you know, having someone like Alan Shearer just hammer it, or Wolves somehow muck it up completely by sort of trying to do free passes and it going nowhere. You know, I'm all
Georgia,
for it.
That was.
It was against Georgia.
I only know that because Nate on Football Neophytes, our friends over there, we're talking about it on their podcast this week because they've never seen an indirect free kick in the penalty area before, which they've been watching Premier League football for two, three years. So it doesn't happen very often, does it? And I thought, well, the first thing that came to memory was the one that Shearer blasted.
I remember him scoring one, I think, against Newcastle as well. And it was basically, it was a replica of the
same. It's the same goal.
Where it is just like, I'm thumping this into the top corner. I don't care if your head's going to get in the way of it. And again, I'm all for it.
The other day as well, there was I can't remember who Man City were playing, but there was
Brighton.
Was it Brighton game? And I was like, oh my God, indirect free kick. I don't know why, but it almost gives you that kind of suspense, doesn't it? Whereas, penalties they happen too often now, don't they?
Or was it Palace?
Okay. Right. So we'll quickly go through Twitter Corner now. I've pulled up the tweets, so I'm trying to think of a nice one to start us off with. David Evans asks, has Cotrone asked Nuno for a second season, Alan Partridge style? That's how he imagines it anyway. I mean, we've kind of touched upon, you know, will he stay or will he go with Cotrone, I guess, to a degree. I think we're sort of the opinion, I think me and Kim were sort of very much keep him because he is a body. Stu, where did you sort of land in the end? Will he get his second season of knowing, I was trying to think of a pasta pun with knowing me, knowing you, but I'm struggling.
Penaping? No, that's not working. Ideally, in an ideal world,
knowing Fuse, you, Lee.
That is not the title before you even think about it. Forget that. Forget that was even mentioned ever. I think the problem with him, it's just the fact that the lack of football for me. In an ideal world, that he would be an ideal backup striker. And we could put Fabio Silva in the under-23s to get proper, playing proper football and giving him proper game time against players of, if we're being honest, his own kind of what he should be playing against, really, at this point in his development. So, but it's not an ideal world, is it? And he hasn't played any football. And if he's going to be playing second fiddle anyway, and he's coming off the bench, and again, the miss against Albion, it's just match fitness, and he's not going to get that if he's playing off the bench. So I don't see the point of him staying, really.
I was going to say, the next one we've got is actually directed to you, Stu. From a song called Scott, WWFC88. Yes. Will Stu ever get behind Nuno again?
No.
Ever. Even if we manage to finish, I don't know, 10th and get to the quarters of the cup, how will you feel then?
My problem is, I know that this is, the hate will be coming at Studio4Z. Just get it out there, not Fancast. He's bottled it too many times in big games for me now, and it's just, there's no real trust that he didn't do it again. So that's my big issue with him, that it happens over and over and over again. And when we have an opportunity to do something, it's all kind of negative tactics first and safety first too many times for me. And I would love it to change, but I can't see it. So, I'd love to change my mind, but I don't think I will.
Interesting. Next one we've come up with is a slightly different note. It's from Nag at KingWolf84. He's a regular contributor to Twitter Corner. It's about Wolves Win, which I know sort of he's a big advocate of. So, essentially, Wolves Win are top of their league at the moment, haven't lost a game this season, still in the FA Cup. I think they were in a very similar situation last season memory. Now, they're potentially facing their season being null and void again with the latest restrictions. What would the Fancast solutions be to this situation? And that wasn't what, you know, what would you, it's the Fancast solutions, guys. So we can work together on this, or, you know, we can give our ideas, but, you know, how can we fix essentially, you know, second tier women's football?
Storm the building. It's the only thing left. Full force, like Ross Kemp in Ultimate Force style. It's the only thing left. So if they're not avoid it again, after what happened last year as well, just do it on points per game. What's the problem?
You
do points per game for 2 years?
30 points ahead or something.
Yeah,
like that.
It was something silly. It would have taken a genuine collapse for them to, like, they'd have basically not had to have played the rest of the season for them to have not got promoted or won the league. You know, it's I don't see why. If they played essentially what, half a season, two thirds of the season last season, if they've done the same this season, just combine the results.
Yeah. Well, they were talking in commentary tonight. I mean, we have got to mention Adam Summerton's excellent little nod to the Kilman bingo game.
Yeah, 10 minutes in.
He's fully aware.
He's broken the fourth wall there. Yeah. And, you know, if the jokes become self-aware, does that mean we now have to stop joking about it now? Because that's been a good source of content for likes of us and Tim Spears.
Well, I think because he's kind of one of us now, because like he was saying about the, he was with us at the European adventure and everything. I think everyone else kind of who's not in the Twitterverse, like usual commentators like Martin Tyler and stuff, and are still going to be doing it oblivious to the kind of the meta joke about the whole situation. So I mean, what was he even talking about? Oh, yeah, women's football. No, what I was saying about the National League North, when they were talking about that being canned for 2 weeks, which if it's canned now, it's over. Yeah. It's not going to be coming back. So if everyone's played, like you presume, if everyone's played half of the league games, they just call it as it is. It's simple. It's if you played half your games or work it out as a kind of Duckworth-Lewis kind of average of the games that you're missing and just do it like that. Don't null and void it. If you null and void it, it's the worst thing you could possibly do. So just work, just find a way to do it.
They should have just gotten promoted last season. So
yeah.
It's getting beyond the joke now, isn't it, really?
And it'd be the same if it was someone else. I mean, obviously not Albion women, but if it was any team in that situation, it's just not fair.
No.
Yeah, I think it's a genuine shame, shock, disappointment how they've sort of treated the women's game, large portions of this, to be honest. But that could be genuinely another pod for another day if we wanted to. We will round up on one last question. I'd love to end on a silly one. It's another one from Vinny, WWFC. So his question this week is, what would you do with a drunken sailor?
Kim?
See, that makes me scared for your answer, Stu. Yeah. What would you do with a drunken sailor?
Drown him.
I'd go in to get the next round in. It'd be easy because he wouldn't remember.
I'd probably just get them some water and some paracetamol. Make sure he just got home okay.
And that says everything about you and me.
Showed our different personalities there.
Yeah. just make sure you get home safe. That's all you need. But we'll end the show on that lighthearted note for myself. And that we will be back after the Chelsea game midweek, where hopefully Wolves can regain their league form. Big thanks to our sponsors once again, Pixel Yeti Media. Make sure you check out their website, pixelyetimedia.com. Make sure you check out our YouTube channel. We're kind of really pushing a lot of content on there at the moment. I know we'll have our post-match reaction on here. We'll have some clips from today's show on there, hopefully. We might have Gully's tactical analysis, and we've also got stories from the pack there on Monday as well. So there's lots of fresh fun content going on there. Podcast wise, as I mentioned, we've also got stories from a pack coming out on Monday as well with Dave Eastwell. Make sure you're keeping up with all things Fancast and Wolves on our socials, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're on them all. And from me, it's goodbye from Kim.
Bye.
And it's goodbye from Stu.
One last thing. No, a silly way today, for serious for a minute. Friend of the show, Steve Koenig's dad is currently in hospital in a serious way. So hopefully, fingers crossed, thoughts with him. He gets better soon.
We'll send our best to Steve and his family. He's a really top guy who kind of comes over to England as much as he can to come follow Wolves. So hope everything is well with your family as well, Steve. And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.